Time to talk to my friend Luke Tacock, columnist, News and Observer. He was there last night. We're going to get to 67 shots in honor of the debut of the man wearing number 67 for the Carolina Hurricanes, Max Pacioretty. But we're going to start with the game you were at the arena for the other night. I'm going to start with State and Duke. Your thoughts, Mr. Luke, on not only what we watched, but the significance of what we watched.
Yeah, Duke having, I think, 3 field goals on 67 shots feels about right. a couple things there. I mean, obviously, Duke struggled at PNC before.
Yeah.
I don't ever remember a Duke team getting absolutely just big man the way that the Blue Devils did by a team that wasn't, you know, a national power. Like, you know, NC State's a bubble team. I think, you know, they have a path forward. They should be in the tournament. But that's not, you know, look at NC State, especially with Dusan Mahorchik out and say, well, that's a big physical team that's going to push you around. NC State shot the lights out and pushed Duke around. I mean, Kyle Filipowski got dunked on. Mm-hmm. DJ Burns was just had his way in the second half. I mean, this is a guy who was at Winthrop last year playing against, you know, top 50 NBA draft prospects and bullying them around. And so I think John Shire's got some work to do. We know he's not his mentor. He's not his predecessor. But his predecessor, we all know what he would have done in this situation. The jersey's on the floor, the locks changed on the doors, Cameron at midnight, whatever. There's an old, long Mike Krzyzewski playbook of when you feel that your team is mentally and physically not tough. And Jeremy Roach said it, soft, timid. Like, there's no hiding from this. It'll be interesting to see how John Shire handles this. He's a different kind of coach. He's younger. He's more in tune, I think, with this generation just because he's closer to it and understands it. But he's got to find a way to get his team to play tougher. Because when they got going at certain points late in the first half, early in the second half at times, Duke looked okay.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as something would go wrong, the Blue Devils just kind of folded. There's no toughness at all. And that's just not what you think of when you think of Duke basketball. We've seen it come and go, obviously, over the years, especially in the one-and-done era. But I just don't remember a game where Duke just got beat down that badly, both physically and mentally, by a team that you didn't expect it coming in. Maybe, you know, against a Syracuse team with 5 seniors or something. But, you know, this was different. That said, State played great. And as the great NC State basketball philosopher Sidney Lowe would say, got to make shots.
Yeah, and State did absolutely make shots. It took a while. It took 3-some minutes before anybody made a shot. And then once the lid came off for State, it really came off. Here's the thing about it. I actually thought going into the game that it was just a bad matchup for Duke because State's strength is 2 super quick guards. And I don't believe Duke has a player anywhere on their roster who can stay in front of Jarkel Joyner or Turquavion Smith. They get wherever they want with the ball. The only way Duke was going to win that, and there's a path for it, was to dominate the interior, but they kept turning it over. And 21 empty possessions, forget about a missed shot, 21 turnovers pretty much dooms you against a team that can get out and play good chaos ball, which it doesn't appear that Duke can do.
No, and you know, I think what they really need, John Shire aside, is, you know, Jeremy Roach is the veteran on this team. He's experienced. He's been through it. They need him to step forward and lead, and this is that time. Maybe it didn't come together for him until now, and it certainly didn't Wednesday night, but now is the time, and he's got to take charge of this team and be the alpha dog. He wasn't on the basketball court Wednesday. He's got to do that off the court, and then on the court going forward. Now, if Duke is going to turn this around, there's no reason Duke can't. It's been a discombobulated season because of the injuries to Whitehead and Lively and all of that. But, you know, I look at this Duke team, and I don't see a leader. I think it will be Jeremy Roach in the end, but I don't see it right now. And I don't know who scores for Duke against good teams. Like, you talked about staying in front of Turquavion Smith and Jarkel Joyner. How about just going toe-to-toe with them? Like, who wins a game of horse on Duke with those guys?
Right.
So Duke's got to figure that out. It should be Whitehead. I don't know that Lively has that much offensive upside. We've got a pretty good book on him by now. But as Whitehead gets healthier, he's got to start scoring. He's got to be an explosive scorer for Duke because the other guys they have just aren't capable at this point.
There's no explosive. Who has the best first step on that team? Again, I thought that that game was more about State than it was about Duke, but I totally understand. The margin was probably about Duke. But I liked State in the game going in simply because of the matchup. All right, last night, Max Pacioretty, who wears number 67, drew into the lineup for the first time this year. Carolina had 67 shots. My fear is that when Andre Kasha comes back, who wears number 73, it's going to be even uglier.
Two more shots, Adam, for the kids. Two more shots. Could have done it.
Right.
I wrote this. It was like Paul Maurice flashback night, right? Great zone time. Ran into a hot goalie. Rod Brindamore's right. Sometimes it happens. But this is not a team that should score three goals and 67 shots with UC Saros or anybody in net. And finishing has been an issue for this team all year.
Yep.
Max Pacioretty's supposed to help with that. He had chances in the game last night, mm-hmm. for sure. You could see it. He didn't score, but he may have the quickest shot on the team in terms of his release and the pop on it. So he's going to be okay. But the Hurricanes in general, this is a long-standing problem.
Sure.
They've got to find a way to finish chances. I do think some of that is the law of averages, but when you get into a game last night, it's something that hasn't happened to this team in 40 years. It becomes a bit crazy. But that's it, man. You show up hoping to see Max Pacioretty and wave at Nino Niederreiter, and you end up seeing history. That's sports, man.
Andrei Svechnikov had 10 scoring chances, 5 of them grade A's, and he had no points. He was otherwise great, but he just couldn't buy a goal. I don't know how he didn't score on the power play with about 2 minutes left. I mean, UC yeah. Saros was laying down, napping, and Andre couldn't get it past Saros, or did hit a leg on the way through. I don't know, but I couldn't figure out.
He said Saros got a piece of it, and I kind of said, what happened? And he was like, I shot it and he made a save. Like, there literally were no words to describe what happened other than, like, that was a completely open net and he got his whatever on it. So it was weird. I mean, like, give Saros credit. He played great. And he played great against the Hurricanes before. I mean,
yep.
This is not his first 50-save win over the Hurricanes, which is a crazy thing to say. But, you look at the roster, everybody but Jesperi Kotkaniemi had at least one shot on goal, and Kotkaniemi had 3 blocks. So it's not like he wasn't involved. The power play looked good. I mean, Paul Stastny at one point looked like his head was spinning because Natchez and Svechnikov were flying around him so fast.
Yeah.
He had great chances too. He played well with those guys.
Yep.
It just one of those weird nights. Now, that said, 3 goals should be enough to beat that Nashville team.
Yes.
The way the Hurricanes played last night. You know, they lost track of Forsberg on the first goal and Kochetkov was small. They screwed up a face-off coverage. They left 3 guys, left the guy at the post to go take other guys, and it's the most open Cody Glass is ever going to be.
Mm-hmm.
I asked Rod this after the game. I think it was so easy for them that they just switched off a little bit on defense. He disagreed. He said this, you know, it's just blips, mistakes that can't happen, whatever. But I think, honestly, they were buzzing so much, and it was so easy, and it was so much just like shinny out there, whipping it around and taking shots and making passes, that when it came to the details on the defensive end, they just kind of slipped a little bit, and it cost them, because 3 goals should be enough to win in a game like that.
All right, final thing.
They should score 15, but.
Final thing on this, Luke Tkach. Second game in a row where Kochetkov was, there were at least 1, probably 2 bad goals allowed. Any concern in your mind?
No, I mean, I think you're dealing with a rookie in January of a season he wasn't expecting to be in the NHL. I wasn't as harsh on him last night as you were. He was small on the Forsberg shot, but you're talking about the hottest player in the league,
mm-hmm.
15 feet of open ice. And Forsberg may score on that no matter how well Kochetkov
sure.
plays it. The fourth goal was a tip. The fifth
yeah.
is an empty netter. The Glass goal, he was just completely hung out to dry.
That was not his fault.
Yeah, it's so. I mean, I thought he was fine. He made a couple really nice saves. You know, he made a great save in tight on Nino Niederreiter.
He did.
That would have put the Predators in the lead. So I thought he was fine. That was a night where they needed him to match Saros and win the game for them, because they weren't on their on their toes defensively. There were some slip-ups where you need your goalie to bail you out, whether it's leaving the hottest player in the league wide open at the right circle on a penalty kill or whatever. But I would have started come back with Ronta after the Rangers game. I get why they didn't, but I would have changed up on that, and I'm sure they will now. But you know, I'm sure this is a lot for a kid like that.
Uh-huh.
We expect a lot of him because he's talented and he's got a quirky personality and all of that. But we're asking a lot of him, and it's not surprising if he tails off a hair here, and that's why you've got Antti Raanta, and presumably Freddie Andersen will be back at some point soon. He's been practicing for almost a month now, or maybe it is a month today. and then that takes some of the pressure off. But, you know, Kachekov will be around. I think he's earned the right to stay up here for a while. He's earned the right to keep playing. I think there's room for a three-goalie rotation given the schedule. But I think we're seeing a little bit of a dip in his play, but not unexpectedly so.
Luke Tkachuk of the News and Observer is joining us here. Follow him on Twitter, at Luke Tkachuk. And I want to thank you, before I ask you another question, thank you for your help on the final three episodes of the 25th Anniversary Canes Corner podcast, available wherever you get your podcast. Search Hurricane or Carolina Hurricanes 25th Anniversary podcast. All right, so the National Football League canceled the Bills and Bengals. Ain't playing that. And now they're in the process of voting to see, I don't know how they can change rules to benefit or work against the Cincinnati Bengals. I don't know what they're doing. Why isn't it enough that they just go with the rule that they've got, which is winning percentage?
Yeah, it's a little hinky to me. I mean, I think everybody's been thrown off a little bit by this situation. I mean, I don't ever remember a situation where every single person on Twitter responded to every update with, "Oh my God, I can't believe it." Like this has just been jarring for everybody. Like, everybody's sort of thrown off by watching a guy almost die on national television from what appeared to be a totally innocuous play. So I think we're all a little rattled by what's happened since Monday, and thrilled by the way things have turned out. So I think that probably extends to the NFL and its competition committee and the owners, who are all maybe a little flustered and dealing with a no contest or playoff implications. But the solution here is simple. The solution is a neutral site AFC championship game at Ford Field, so the Lions finally get to host a late round playoff.
I thought if you do it in Indianapolis, the Colts can hang another banner.
Progressive presents Adjusting to the Suburbs.
I never really thought about tools until I bought a house in the suburbs. It's like this weird homeowner test if I need a tool for a project and don't have it. And my neighbor Ted loves to give me that look when I ask to borrow a pole saw. A year ago, I didn't even know pole saws existed. And now I gotta borrow one from Ted? What is happening?
Anyway, when you save with Progressive by bundling your home and auto, that's the easy part of adjusting to the suburbs. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company. Coverage provided and serviced by affiliates and third-party insurers.
Venture X from Capital One is the travel card for people always asking,
where next?
You earn 10x miles on hotels and rental cars, and 5x miles on flights booked through Capital One Travel, and 2x miles on everything else you buy with Venture X. Plus, receive premium travel benefits like access to over 1,300 airport lounges. The Venture X card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Did the Predators hang a banner last night? UC Saros, 64 saves.
They should. That's a lot of saves.
They might.
I am absolutely against a neutral site AFC championship game. Like, just deal with it. Just, it's okay. Like, considering the circumstances, complaining about whatever inequities in a sport that is laden with inequities, for crying out loud, they played 17 regular season games. So half the league played fewer home games than the other half of the league. So why are we worried about this? Just play it. It's like, sorry, such is life. Deal with it, which is what they always tell us anyway. Just suck it up and deal with it. But no, we got to complain
next,
and change
next
rules.
Man up.
Yeah.
Next man up.
Right. Exactly. Next man up. Are you ready? Do you think that the president will approve a 90-team NCAA tournament?
No. I mean, I'm concerned about it. I don't think it's great for the sport because I don't have a lot of trust in the way it would be implemented at the moment. But I also don't get the sense from people on the inside on the basketball committee and in the world of college basketball, whether it's the coaches association or whatever, that there's a lot of momentum for it. Just because you're allowed to go to this percentage, which we give you 90
right.
teams, doesn't mean that you have to. And this is the legislation that's being talked about is really for other sports, and it gets caught up in basketball because that's such a hot button issue. I do think as the television deal comes up for renewal in a few years, the NCAA is going to want a lot more money out of that deal. It's like the ACC's deal. It's become undervalued over time. And one way to get more value for Turner and CBS, assuming they're back in, is to create more games. And, you know, if you listen to people who are smart about this, and they're not people who have a vested interest like Ken Pomeroy and John Gassaway, and people who pay really close attention to this stuff, if you add another 8 games to the NCAA tournament, another 8 teams, and go to 72, or I'm sorry, go to 76, the math is off in my head. There's
really
a way to do it where you basically just expand the first 4,
right?
And make it all at-large teams. The teams that get in, the vast majority of them are mid-majors. So it's not stacking the deck in favor of the SEC and ACC and Big 12. Although these days, ACC is not even in that conversation because what's it going to do with a 6th team at this point? But, it might be good for the game if you have a big Tuesday, Wednesday, at-large, predominantly mid-major, you know, first 16 or whatever. So there is some possibility to do this and do this right. But I don't think there's enough momentum for it to happen until the television deal is involved. And you know what? That's fine. 68 is actually a pretty good number. We
well,
get
it's,
teams in the tournament. And the teams that miss usually miss for a reason. Like
yeah.
Wake Forest could have gotten in. Nothing they did that was out of their control kept them out of the tournament. It was entirely in their control.
Right.
I mean, really, other than NC State, the year they got sent to the NIT, the first year of the net, where they tried to play a good non-conference schedule. It didn't work out that way, and they got burned by it. Teams that don't make the tournament usually don't make it for a reason at 68. So I'm fine with staying here. I'm less against expansion than I was maybe even 6 months ago because I've started to see people who are really smart lay out plans where it makes sense. And if you can explain it to me in a way where it really does make sense and doesn't dilute things and doesn't stretch it out, then I'm okay with it because it's a fun tournament. And if you add games, you know, that's adding to the experience. I do think you run the risk of ruining it if you can't get a bracket on one page of paper, but maybe I'm just old-fashioned.
We'll use legal pads at that point, Luke Dukak. Here's the thing. I don't think you'll ever ruin the tournament. I think that is that's the fallacy. But I do think that there isn't as much money in an expanded tournament as people think. And, I mean, there'd be more money in just tearing the contract up and redoing it. Forget about adding however many more games that is. And I disagree. I think that we would add mostly major conference schools. I think we would add mostly. Yes, I do. I believe we would.
Do your research.
No, I understand.
The numbers are actually really interesting because I thought the same thing, and then I've seen it laid out, and I thought, okay, well, maybe it wouldn't be so bad. So
Why would Greg Sankey argue for more teams from the Missouri Valley Conference?
Well, he's not explicitly.
No, but I mean, if they believe, because they've done their research too, if they believe, if Greg Sankey is the one out there waving the flag for this, if they believe it would be good for the mid-majors, he wouldn't care. They're doing it to get more units for the SEC.
I mean, it's a rising tide is going to lift all boats, and a bigger television deal is going to make more money for everybody. But I would caution you to think about this, that what Sankey is pushing at the Division I Transformation Committee is not necessarily basketball-focused. Honestly,
baseball. Do it baseball.
The example that he's used the most is baseball and Mississippi State. So, I wouldn't necessarily put too much into the motivation on that the way, say, last two summers ago with the college football playoff, where there was clearly an angle being played by the SEC and Notre Dame trying to slip a fast one past everybody. I don't think that's the same here. The transformation committee recommendations may have an impact on basketball. They're not basketball driven. This is really for sports like soccer, baseball, sports that don't have the same representation and finding ways to give more athletes a chance to compete in championships. I don't think it's quite as cynical as that on the basketball side. But I do think there are some unintended consequences that people like Sankey may not be expecting when you really dig into the numbers.
I will see you next Tuesday night when Dougie Hamilton comes back to PNC Arena when the Devils come to town. I look forward to that, Luke.
The Devils, potential first-round playoff matchup.
Oh, my gosh. We haven't played the Devils in, what, two playoff rounds? No, we haven't played them since in the Rod Brind'Amour era. That's right.
Yeah, 14 years.
Be fun. All right. I'll talk to you later. Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
At Luke DeCock on Twitter.
Why do dry January when you could do sweaty January? Right now, get up to $500 off Peloton tread packages. Take your training to the next level with accessories like a heart rate band, non-slip grip dumbbells, yoga mat, and more. Join now and you'll see why 92% of households that start the year with Peloton are still active a year later. All access membership separate. Offer ends January 8th, 2023. Excludes Tread Basics package. See additional terms at onepeloton.com.